Hey, Rivki here. Hope you all enjoyed our last episode with Miriam Pascal Cohen. If you haven't heard that DMC yet, don't miss it. It's the episode right below this one in the podcast app, whatever you're listening to this episode on. So in that episode, we talked a lot about physical preparation, about food for Pesach, which is super delicious and yummy. But Alex and I also wanted to make sure that you were taken care of ruchniistically. So we thought we would replay this episode that we had from last year's season with Rebbetzin Esti Hamilton. We had a DMC with her before Pesach last year, and we thought that it would be a nice treat to pop it back up in your feed and you can listen to it and enjoy it. Should be still pretty relevant. Esti doesn't live in London anymore. Now she lives in Florida, but all the Pesach inspo is evergreen and should still be enjoyable. So here it is for you, and wishing everyone a Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Is supposed to be that. And sometimes for our children, we think to ourselves, they have to have the same connection with Hashem that I have, and they have to, you know, understand everything that I do. And actually, your child has to do exactly what his neshama has to do. And if his neshama can't really grasp that, then not only is it not your responsibility to teach him, that's not his tafkid in the world at all, even to do.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivki Silver.
And this is Deep, Meaningful Conversations, powered by Town Appliance.
Alex and I wear a lot of hats.
We're both writers.
And speakers.
And so many other things, mothers, wives, friends, and active community members.
We love using our skill sets to bring you the best guests to share their wisdom, perspective, and advice on relevant topics.
And we love schmoozing about the topics that are on our mind, and hopefully yours too. Like one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and talking about the stuff we're all thinking about.
So whatever you're doing while listening to our podcast, thanks for joining us for a DMC. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. So we are all knee-deep in Pesach preparations at this point. Whether you're staying home or going away, there is always a lot to prepare for Pesach. Isn't it nice to have a DMC to keep you company?
I know. Well, this is why we do what we do.
I feel like it's really our mission to provide content that's going to infuse some meaning and thoughtfulness into our everyday lives, whether we're, you know, whatever it is we're doing. I know that I definitely need those reminders to help me stay focused and get my priorities straight when I'm super busy with all my responsibilities, like all just all the whatever, like the endless to-do list. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes my like, I don't always put my spiritual needs on my to-do list. Shocking. So especially when it's like so hectic and preparing for Yantiv when there's so many details.
Yeah, so much. You're just trying to keep your head above water sometimes.
Indeed.
And I find, Rivki, like the funny thing is, you know, preparing these episodes, it really helps us too.
Absolutely.
So value this. And we definitely benefit on a personal level by putting out DMC.
Absolutely. It's funny, this year I also wrote an article on Pesach prep, and I was working on it before Purim, and at first I was like, oh my gosh, this is making me crazy. But then it really helped me get like into such like a different mindset shift. It's just, it's Baruch Hashem. It's nice to be doing this work that we're doing. Yeah. It's very helpful. Okay.
And I think also part of it is that it is mindset. Like, that's it. Like, whether you're putting out a DMC or you're a listener, like just to get a frame, get into the frame of mind and get into the mode, that's already the first step, and it's super helpful.
Absolutely. Okay, so Pesach. Where do we start?
Maybe we won't start. Okay, well, obviously there's just so much to say, but I know, really, I think we should just start with our conversation with Esti, okay? Like, what else is there to say?
Exactly. You're right, Alex. Let's do it. But first, let's tell you a little bit about Esti Hamilton, or Rebbetzin Esti, as she is known online. She is a Torah teacher, spiritual mentor, and motivational speaker for thousands of students across the globe. After a decade of teaching in Israel at many, many seminaries that you may have heard of, Rebbetzin Esti returned to London with her family and continued her educational outreach work in schools, university campuses, and Jewish institutions around the country. Rebbetzin Esti's classes are renowned for a focus on spiritual growth, building inner strength, maintaining strong relationships, and close textual analysis of the great texts of our Jewish tradition. She has also taken a leading role in organizing support groups for parents with disabled children, as her oldest son was born with profound mental and physical disabilities. So Esti and her husband have been blessed with 6 children and currently reside in London. You can find her lectures on tour anytime, and we will link that and her website on our show notes.
Yeah, Esti is very relatable and practical. as well as inspiring. So she was really our go-to for a conversation to give us chizuk for Pesach. And we're going to be talking about Essie's own relationship with Pesach. You know, that stereotype of the woman falling asleep at the Seder without any chance to prepare herself spiritually. Engaging, also with all types of children during the Seder, which mm-hmm. I think is really relevant.
Yeah,
you know?
I love what she had to say about that, yes.
Also, we asked Essie to share some of her favorite Torah thoughts that she thought would be relevant. And we were very blessed to have an in-person interview all the way from London in my dining room in University Heights, Ohio. And I just want to say, like, she has such a calming presence. She's a real role model. I benefited so much from being in the same room with her, talking to her.
Yeah, agree.
So without further ado, here's our DMC with Essie Hamilton.
Hello, Essie. We are so, so, so excited to have you here and have you here in person also on the DMC podcast. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. I can't believe I'm in Cleveland.
All the way from England.
All the way from England. It's very exciting.
So let's start off with, I'm sure our listeners know you, but it's nice to start with some, like, you know, getting to know you. So who is Rebbetzin Esti, and can you introduce yourself a drop to our listeners?
Absolutely. So I am primarily an educator. So I've been a Torah teacher already for 20 years. I've been teaching. And actually, the term Rebbetzin Esti started only about 2.5 years ago when I went on Instagram during COVID and I opened an account, and that's the name that I chose for it, and it's become a bit of a brand, but really I'm just Essie Hamilton. I have a lot of shiurim on Torah Anytime, and I give shiurim all the time, which I love doing. I'm a kind of inspirational, motivational speaker, a spiritual coach, a Torah teacher. I travel the world. I'm now an international speaker. During COVID, I was able to be international, like, from my house, which was the best, because when you've got husband and lots of kids at home, it's quite hard to do all of that. And I try and inspire people in, you know, in the way they live, and also try and take from the Torah things that can speak to most people and be able to bring the Torah alive for everyone.
Hmm.
Beautiful.
So when you went on social media, I didn't realize it was so recent. Is that when your speaking, you know, engagements increase in terms of becoming more international, or you already were doing that before?
That's such a good question. So me and my husband, we lived for the first 10 years of our life in Israel, and that's when I taught mostly in the seminaries and also for all the Kira programs that came into Israel, I taught for them. So a lot of people already knew me. And then when I moved to London, I carried on doing the same thing. So I think everybody who already knew me, and also I got quite big through Torah Anytime because it's such a huge flat platform and everybody around the world accesses it. So that's also, but I think that I became very relatable through Instagram, which it's such an amazing medium because you can kind of, first of all, you can create your life, where lots of people think that that's not such a good thing because you only give the perfect moment.
Right, the highlight reels.
The highlight reels. I was very, part of my reason for going on Instagram was also because I have a very disabled special needs son. He's our oldest child. He's 19, he's already almost 20. And I kind of, one of my purposes, one of the things that I do besides for teaching Torah is I run support groups for mothers with special needs children. And I advocate for the special needs community in the from world. And so one of the things that I did on my Instagram weekly was I would make a reel of my son and how cute he was and us interacting with him and giving people a window into that part of our life, which was, I think, very rare and why I got so popular so fast. And it kind of made everybody, oh, where else can I find Essie? And then they found my Torah. So I feel like some people found my Torah first and then my Instagram. Some people found my Instagram first, and it made me very relatable and personal. And then they wanted to hear the Torah that I said because it seemed like, well, it comes from a genuine person who doesn't have a perfect life.
Hmm,
and that's more attractive to people, I think.
I think that's fantastic. They already had, like, that kind of personal connection with you.
Yes.
And then they're probably more receptive to hear whatever you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Hmm. That's what I found.
And a lot of your talks, do you focus on your journey with your special needs son, or is...
It depends what I'm talking about. Mm. You know, if people want a, you know, Rosh Chodesh LL talk, so probably I'm not speaking about that. But if, I mean, I know there's some communities who specifically, I remember during COVID, Chai Lifeline in Canada called me and said, can you please speak to our parents who have sick children? And so that was just for them, you know, and it was amazing because we were all on Zoom and they managed to do it across the country, across Canada, for all these mothers. And that was very, very special. But then when people ask me to speak about, you know, the Kedusha of Shabbos, or they ask me to speak about, you know, people ask me to speak about certain topics. So then, no, I'm not speaking about him. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you are speaking about Pesach today. That's why you're on board. So let's hear.
I'm
you know,
so excited.
How many shirim do you have on Torah anytime about Pesach?
We're gonna have to go look it up.
Okay, so we love. You know, I think Pesach is a relationship, right? Like we all have relationships with Pesach.
Absolutely. Yes.
And trauma. Right. And PTSD.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right. Love, hate, love.
And lots of people over COVID who had never made Pesach had to make Pesach. So now everyone's made Pesach.
That's true. It was like there it was
we
such
go.
Like
so now it's universal.
It's funny. Over COVID, we made Pesach our first year of married because I was expecting our first child, and then Baruch Hashem, we've been able to go to my in-laws all of these years. Right. But COVID was the first year we made
there
it.
You go. And you're not the only one. Of course, I've heard this from millions of people. Right. Yeah.
And I definitely like now. How many years? How many years ago was that? I don't know. I think I've made two Pesachs since then.
Yeah.
But I saw how. Over shopped like I like treated it. I was like more I was nervous
last
about it.
Year. Yeah.
And the past 2 years, the 2 years I did, I just like bought too much. It was like cooked too much. Like why do I have to make all these desserts?
But also because you hadn't been making it for years and years and years. That's right. You don't know what you need.
That's right. And then this year I'm like, guys, like I'm not doing that again. We're gonna have Jello and fruit for dessert. And like, okay, yes, the Pesach brownies, but like I went overboard. It's just not necessary. But it takes time to get into that rhythm. So okay, fine. So what I love to hear from you, Essie, is how you define your relationship with Pesach. Let's talk a little bit about Pesach as in your childhood, because so many of our memories are associated with our childhood in terms of the Yomim Tovim, and how has that evolved in terms of relationship today?
Okay, so my parents, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Kimchi, were big Rav and Rebbetzin in the London community for like 35 years. And my mother's favorite Yontif is Pesach, actually. And she loved Pesach. And whatever your mother loves, that's what you love. Oh. So it's a kind of, you know, I don't even want to say it because most people have such a bad association with Pesach, or maybe their mother was very anxious. But I remember my mother, and she worked very, very hard. She would buy the most, like the 20 kilo bag of potatoes, and all the little kids would sit around with their own peeler just peeling the potatoes for like 5 hours or 10. You know, I remember it being a family event. Like once my mother turned over the kitchen, everybody had to be in the kitchen, and everybody was peeling stations or Morrow stations or whatever. Cute. So it was like a family affair. It was very fun. And I remember my mother only had a dress that she wore every year Seder night that she kept in her cupboard that she wouldn't wear any single other night of the whole year. And this was her Seder night dress. And now I have one also. Aww, exactly like
that's
that.
Very cute.
And my mother said, this is my most expensive, most special dress, and I'm wearing it for Seder night because that's the most special night of the year. And it was very amazing to grow up in that kind of way, because now as a mother myself with my own family and how exhausting Pesach really is to make, and it really, really is, and how much responsibility the mother of the family takes to make Pesach, because it's your responsibility to make sure all the chametz is gone. It's your responsibility that when you sit down for Seder night, there is food on the table and the table's laid that the way it's supposed to be, and that you have everything that you need. So it's like exhausting. But if you have the memory of this is so much fun, and this is all of us together doing something really important and very special, then you carry that with you into your adulthood. So there we go.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
You know what I'm struck by is two just small examples that you gave, the dress and the peeling of potatoes. Like sometimes we think it has to be like so much, like we have to do all the stuff to like give our children our memories, but like those are relatively simple things that you remember and that made a huge impact on you.
Yes, I remember we'd put the music on very loud, probably louder than my parents wanted, because there were all the kids in the kitchen. If we were all going to have to do it together, so we'd want to
make it a party.
Yeah, make a party. And my mother would have a list on the fridge of all the things, like who did the car, so who's responsible for cleaning the car, and who's responsible for cleaning, you know, this farm trunk, and who's responsible for cleaning inside all the dining room chairs where all the chametz falls inside. You know, there were specific jobs. And we all had jobs to do. I'm sure my mother then, in the night when we went to bed, would then probably
double check
and get over. But the idea also that everybody was included. I think some mothers feel I have to do it all myself,
right?
And don't make it into a family project. Every kid has off school for like a week before Pesach, and to give kids the kind of engage them in a leadership role during Pesach instead of relegate them to, can you just leave me alone and don't bother me for this next week, makes them feel empowered to be included in Pesach, and it makes Pesach more special for them. They kind of get ownership of Pesach.
Oh, absolutely. I'm getting like such ideas. I'm like, mm-hmm. What lists can I make?
You need lists.
She sounds very organized.
I don't know. My mother's not like there. It wasn't, I don't know. It's not that she's disorganized, but I know some organized women that are like, no, that's not, it wasn't my mother, but she was very, you know, it was the week before Pesach, so everything has to get done. And it was very clever that it wasn't just on her.
Yeah.
I think that lots of women make that mistake. It's just all on me. And, you know, everybody has to contribute.
Yeah,
certain attitude.
So did your family host a lot of people then, since he was the Rav?
Definitely. We always had guests for Seder night, both Sedarim. And yeah, the whole Pesach was just, my mother made huge amounts of food because every meal we had loads and loads and loads of guests. Yeah. And but that was also fun.
Did you try to do that as well? Is that something you've taken
on? Yes. I mean, we also, Pesach is also family time, but also for the people who don't have family that are kind of included in your family, you know, the people in your community that you feel are part of your family, then they join, and that's very special.
Beautiful.
Very nice. So there's definitely the stereotype in reality, as we've mentioned, that it's a lot of work. It's a lot of physical work, mental work, spiritual work. There's a stereotype in reality of a woman working so hard to make Pesach that she falls asleep at the Seder. This actually happened to me last year. I actually fell asleep for Gap, and I was like, oh, I became that person. Or more so doesn't have a chance to prepare spiritually. Like, you come to the table and you're like, I haven't even cracked the Haggadah. I don't, like, what's going on? Do I even remember, like, Halachma, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
What advice do you have for us on like how to avoid that outcome if possible? And any tips or tricks that you've learned over the years? Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like the best Sedarim have always been when it turns out that the first night Seder is on Motzei Shabbos. Do you know when that happens? And then what happens is that everybody's like very stressed. What do you mean? And how are we going to do it?
How are we going to eat the challah without the crumbs?
Yes. And I always think, this is awesome. I get to like basically rest for 24 hours before Seder night. The Sedarim that I've always felt the most connected to is the Sedarim that the 24 hours before has been Shabbos, and I just could totally like sleep and rest. And everything had to be ready for Pesach by Friday, not by Motzei Shabbos. And that gave me that space of time to just recover. So there has to be real recovery. That's the truth. But if we don't have that set up, that means only when the schedule works like that, then it's good. Then I would say there's one side of it, which is make a proper cleaning and proper cooking schedule. And if it doesn't all go to plan, like most things don't go to plan,
right?
Then go to plan B, which is tape cupboards closed, put away toys that you haven't managed to clean, buy the kugels from from the certain person. That means there has to be a plan A where I'm going to clean every single surface and every single piece of Lego, and I'm going to, right? And I'm going to bake every single thing all myself. And
hold on, I have to stop you. Plan A doesn't have to be clean every piece of Lego. I don't want to, right?
Some women use Pesach as a chance to really make an overhaul of their house, especially if you have loads of kids. When do you ever really do that? And they think, okay, I never clean the Lego, so it's a good chance, Erev Pesach, to do that. Because when am I ever going to do that? What's going to force me to do those things? So I don't think that that's what Pesach really means. But it turns out that Jewish women use the opportunity of Pesach to really get rid of lots of things in their house and really go through everything. And it's really, I think, a good intention. It's like spring cleaning. And we know that the more cluttered our space is, the more cluttered our mind is. So actually, it's probably quite good for the family. So I think that's quite a good intention. But in order to do that, you have to start in like January.
Right.
So if you're starting,
like when people say, like, I start cleaning for Pesach by Hanukkah, maybe that's what they mean. They start reading through things.
They start decluttering. They're saying, I don't want to clean all these toys. So which toys does nobody ever play with?
Right.
Then I'm going to give that to Goodwill. I'm going to give that to the charity shop, and then I don't have to clean for Pesach. So, okay, but it's 3 weeks now before Pesach, and you had all these good intentions, but then life happened, and then it was all crazy. So then you have to go to the next plan, which is, what toys can I put away in a cupboard and lock it, and then I don't think about it. What is there a room in this house that nobody's using over Pesach that I can lock, and then I can put everything in there that I didn't manage to do? So there's that kind of, and also the idea that I have to make so much food. If you're still eating off the Pesach food like 3 weeks later, you made too much food. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're still doing that. So really, you have to plan for every meal, and you have to also plan that some meals will be leftovers.
Right.
Like, I always know that Seder night, I plan a lot of food for that meal, and then the next day I never have guests the next day.
Yeah.
And the next day is I write on the schedule leftovers from Seder night because we always have leftovers.
Of course, because no one's hungry.
Who's eating a big meal at midnight, you know? So what happens is that if you designate some meals as leftover meals, and I would say everyday lunch after the Seder night can be designated as leftover meals because usually nobody has guests. And even if you do have one or two guests, there is enough leftovers. But if those meals, you've also made like whole new foods for those meals, you get yourself really stuck because you now have so much food and you don't know what to do with it. And I also think that over Pesach, we don't do enough of what do we have in the fridge. We just kind of keep pulling things out of the freezer. And we do think our kids are going to starve if we don't have every single type of Pesach cookie. Yes. You know, the crinkle cookie and also the chocolate chip cookie and the chocolate chip cookie. And the, you know, and then you've got 18 boxes and people are going to have maybe one or two of those. Yes. So I think that we do overkill in that. So we should also be mindful of that. I also think that it's very important, as in tips and tricks of what I learned from the years, is that the woman of the house buys herself something new for Seder night, not 2 days before Pesach, as is tradition. Mm-hmm. I've already bought myself something new in the January sales when I went to all the Jewish shops with the January sales and got stuff for my kids. I saw a really pretty dress and I thought, oh, that'll be a nice Pesach dress. And I bought it. It was like 70% off.
Nice.
And I put it in my cupboard. And I'm like, that's for Pesach.
That's fantastic.
And when you do that, what you're saying is, I'm also a person. Mm-hmm. It's also very important for me because what I didn't like doing and what I end up doing is like 3 days before Pesach, I was like, did you get anything new for Pesach? I'm like, get anything new for Pesach? Are you crazy? What do you think I've been doing for the last month? Okay. And then he like pushes me out the door. Here's the money. Go get yourself because it's Simchas Yontif. I'm like, what are you doing to me? And I'm like walking around the shop. So I'm bleary eyed and my hands are full of potato peel. And I'm like, do I want to wear this? I don't wear anything. I just want my bed. Right. Then I never find something that I really like, but I buy something anyways. Right. And I never feel so good. So part of like my pre-Pesach prep, a tip, I would say, is go now before you are too exhausted and buy yourself something pretty and put it in the cupboard and say, this is for Pesach for me. And I know that we do this automatically for our kids. It's going to be your Seder night dressing, isn't it? And we do it for everyone else. Right. And we even sharpness everybody else's suits and we just make sure everybody else has got. And then we don't do it for ourselves at all. If we do it for ourselves, it's very last minute. And it's a wrong message to give to your children, to give to your spouse, to give even to yourself, that I come last or not at all. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good tip or trick. And it will make you excited for Pesach because it's exciting. Like I've got a pretty dress that I'm going to wear. It'll make you excited.
Yeah, it feels good.
It feels good. And you want to feel good about yourself. And also I would say while I do all my Pesach cleaning, I'm usually listening to Shirim because they're mind-numbingly boring jobs. That's why. So if I'm peeling potatoes, I should have a Shiron. And this really relates to the spiritual part of the question. How do I spiritually prepare? So I think it's also very important that everyone take charge of their own spirituality. And that is true. That's a truism for always. That means we're always waiting for somebody else to inspire me, somebody else to come and convince me, that's not taking responsibility for your own spirituality. That means already in your life throughout your year, you should already have your favorite, share givers on Torah Anytime and your favorite podcast that you listen to, like this podcast. And you should have your favorite authors that you like to read anyway. And you should take time to walk through a Mocha Sfarim and pick up book jackets and read the back of it. It shouldn't be like a panic a week before Pesach. Hang on a second, I forgot everything I've ever learned about Pesach ever, you know, and who should I quickly listen to? But rather it should be part of your life in general, that you take responsibility of your spiritual life and you find people that you connect to. But also it should be part of your Pesach, like, oh, while I'm doing this, I'm listening to that. And that also feeds you. And that's a very important thing to do.
Very nice. I definitely like the idea of putting on something that I could, while I'm doing those mundane tasks that are, yes, mind numbing, you know, to be able to feed myself in that way. It's a great idea.
So share with us, SC, if you can, your favorite Pesach insight or Torah thought that you find personally meaningful and that you think other women who are listening right now as they're peeling their potatoes might find, you know, relevant as well.
Okay, so there are two different things that I want to say. One is specific to women and one is for everyone. So my father would say every year the rocket story. He made up something called the rocket story. I've been listening to this rocket story since I was born. And it's the story that he says every year on Seder night. I'm going to say it here very short. He kind of does it in like 12 minutes. I'm going to try and do it in two. But it is relatable to all adults, all children, all genders, all ages. And it is kind of the whole idea of Seder night. And this is how the rocket story goes. You ready? Okay, I'm going to, because I'm going to say it in so quick, it might not be so impactful, but you're going to have to just use your imagination, stretch it out for your own family. Okay, fine. So my father says there was once a group of scientists and they wanted to send a rocket to a very, very faraway planet. And it takes 400 years to get to this planet. So they thought, how are we going to send a rocket to this planet? So they decided they were going to take 10 families, put them on a rocket. And these families would marry each other and have more family, four more families. And in 400 years' time, there will be families who will reach this very distant planet, and then they'll be able to discover things about the planet. It's very exciting. So this was a whole, you know, everybody in the world knew about it. There's this rocket that's going to this distant planet, and these families get the opportunity to be the first people who will go on it, and all these families come onto the rocket, and then they put on this rocket, like, you know, photo albums of all the different things on Earth, you know, so that when the children would be born, they'd be able to tell them, this is what an animal looked like, this is what a tree, this is what a plant is, this is what a fruit is, this is what a vegetable is, and everything. So they all went on the rocket. The rocket blasted off. Everybody was really excited, and these families lived on this rocket. And so this was parents and children, and they all had experience being on Earth, and they were all, you know, very excited to go to this planet. And then 50 years passed, and they got married and they had children. These children had never experienced Earth, but the grandparents and the parents said, you know, we come from a planet called Earth, planet Earth, and this is what grass looks like, and this is what animals looks like, and this is what fruit tastes like, and this is what, and here are photos from planet Earth. And they were like, wow, that's so cool. And then they would say, you know, this rocket, we're on our way to that distant planet, and this is how the rocket works. And they taught their kids how to use the rocket. Like, you press this button to go straight, and you press this button, and this is how we repair the rocket when it breaks. And our mission is that we're going to go to this planet. And then those children had children, and about 200 years passed, and there was a generation of children who turned around to their parents and said, were you ever on Earth? And they're like, no, but our grandparents told us that their grandparents told them all about Earth. They go, how do you know it's true? They're like, look, we have all these pictures and this, but they could have made it up. And how do you know, like, where we're going is where we really should be going? Like, we could be going anywhere. And why do we even want to go to that distant planet? And why should we believe you that there was any such thing as planet Earth? And they started pressing the wrong buttons, and they just told, you know, the grandparents, we don't believe that that's where we're from, and we don't believe that that's where we're going to, and we're just floating around in space, meaningless, emptiness, purposelessness. And so if that's true, we can just do what we like. Like, this rocket is our whole world, and so then we can, you know, press any buttons we like, we can eat whatever we like, we can decide where we want to go, because we don't believe that that's where we came from, and we don't believe that's where we're going to. And that is the whole idea of Seder night. Seder night is the night where we say, you know where we came from? We came from Har Sinai. And all the Jews were in Mitzrayim. And this is what happened to us in Mitzrayim. And then Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and there was Kriyas Yamsuf, and then Matan Torah, and Hashem gave us the Torah. And this is where we come from. And do you know where we're going to? We're going towards the Gola, and we're going to, you know, Zman Mashiach. And in order to get there, see this book called the Torah? These are all the things, these are all the buttons that we have to press in order to get there, and this is where we're going to. Mm. And this is the very famous rocket story.
Even like the 2-minute version, I'm like, I'm getting all emotional. That's so powerful.
It's such a powerful story. I've heard this story every Seder night for my whole life, and my father says it every single year, and all the adults at the table, and all the children at the table, and everyone, and my father's very good at embellishing it because he's a natural speaker, so there's lots of details that I missed out, and you can make up any details you want. It's a made-up story, so it doesn't really matter. But the idea is that, like, what an amazing idea to think about. Like, if you know where you're coming from, and you know where you're going to, and you know how to get there, so that's an amazing, that means you're not just floating around in space in a meaningless, purposeless way with no rhyme or reason, that there's a reason and there's a purpose. And that's the rocket story. Hmm. Okay.
Wow.
Okay. That's my first Torah thought about Pesach, that when you asked me that question, that instantly came to mind, because that's like deeply embedded in my soul. Mm,
okay. Clear. Yeah, for sure.
There's another part of the Seder night, which is really, I think, uniquely inspirational for women. And that is, of course, Miriam Hanavia. Miriam Hanavia, I think, is the first from female leader in the whole Torah, the archetype, the prototype. In fact, I have a daughter that I've named Miriam after Miriam Hanavia. She's one of my big heroes. Whenever somebody says, who would you like to meet, you know, of the people in Tanakh, I say always Miriam Hanavia. And she was unbelievable. Even from a child, she had a purpose and a mission and a goal. And as from a child, she said to her father and mother, you know, Paro is only killing the boys, but you're killing the girls and the boys because you decide to get divorced. You have to remarry. And she you know, forced everybody to, you know, from there. And then the mirrors of the women in Klal Yisrael, that was then used for the Beis HaMikdash. That is a whole part of the story of the women always believing there was a Gula. And then Miriam leading last week's Parsha, literally last week's Parsha. Miriam led all the women in song and dance with their instruments that they brought, that they had made in times of Golas for the Gula. And I think that it reminds all the women that we are the moral compass of Klal Yisrael, that we have always been that we can see the bigger picture, that we can imagine the Geula, that we can see the future even when the present looks very bleak, and that we have a special, unique power to do that, so that, and therefore we have the responsibility to tap into that part of us.
Wow, that's fantastic. I have like so many thoughts about the Seder now in my mind after all these conversations. It's really fantastic. And we know that the Pesach, like a big emphasis on this chag is giving over to our children, like with the rocket story, like giving over to our children. Why are we here?
Yes.
Like, what is our purpose? Like, where are we, where do you come from? Where are we going? Exactly. And you know, there's the four sons, there's the four questions, there's all of this.
Yes.
But some of us have families where it's not so simple with our children. It's not like, you know, not every family is like in the picture books where everyone's sitting nicely and everyone's
except our families. Our families are all perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Perfect.
No bickering, just no fighting.
Note for Shidduchim in the future.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Perfect. That's what I'm saying. Perfect. Perfect.
But I know that there's a lot of pressure, like not just the pressure to clean and the pressure to get everything ready, but the pressure to have that experience of giving it over to your children.
Yes.
And like you mentioned, you have a son who's disabled. Yes. And it's not like, that's not, I guess, picture perfect, right? Yes. You'll put it. And what would you tell mothers who have a child who's not going to be even sitting at the table, or maybe they're at the table, but they're not mentally at the table, they're not spiritually at the table. Mm. How would you, you know, encourage those women or help those women? It's very painful. So how can those women still tap into the Simchas of Yantav and that beautiful part of Pesach that we're giving things over to our children if there's a child that you can't really give it over to?
Oh, that is such a good question. That is a very good question, and a question that I had to contend with because of my oldest son, my Bachar, who is really never at our Seder table. And that's the truth. He goes to sleep every night at like an early-ish hour, maybe 7, 8, maybe latest 9, but he's never, and even if he was sitting at the table, he would not understand the rocket story or even any of the stories. And my son is on the very end of one spectrum, but there's lots of people in the middle of the spectrum who are on maybe the autistic spectrum or have children who can physically be there, but like you said, mentally can't be there or can't really understand it or can't sit for like a 7-hour meal. I mean, even adults often can't sit for a 7-hour meal. So to ask that from a child, especially a child maybe who has ADHD or whatever it is that they're... So what's really our job here? So I think that we should split this question into three different categories of children. First, any child with a disability. So we are told that everybody has to learn Torah on their level. And it's not my responsibility to change my child. It took me many years to realize that. It's not my job to change my child. So therefore, whatever my child can understand, that's the only thing I have to tell them. And if you've got a 2-year-old, you say, do you know what happened in Mitzrayim? They go, Pare was a bad man. And you know what? And then, do you know what Hashem did? There was lots of frogs everywhere. And then we got out of Mitzrayim and we all ate matzah. And that's the extent of what your 2-year-old is supposed to know. And to try and like deepen the story, you'll just get her confused. She has no idea what's going on. So why are you doing that? And then if she falls asleep on the couch before, and sometimes I tell parents, you know, kids under the age of 3 or 4, put them to bed before the Seder. Like, you're not doing anyone any favors. All the adults at the table distracted by the tantrum that your child will definitely throw at about 10 o'clock at night because they're just too tired. So they're not gaining, you're not gaining, everyone is a loser in this situation. And we get kind of caught up with the idea like, I am supposed to give to my children what they need and it's all my responsibility. But for children, first of all, the disability, You know, for a long time, I struggled with the idea, like, why would Hashem create a child that could never serve him? My son can't walk or talk or feed himself, but I tell you what, he definitely can't do. He can't learn Torah. He can't do mitzvahs. He can't even understand who Hashem is. So why would Hashem bring a person into this world that can't serve him? And I struggled with that a lot until I realized that just my son's presence in the world is marbei kvod shamayim. That means just his presence, just the fact that he exists, so many people learn from him and so many do chesed for him and so many people learn from being around him what it is to be a neshama versus a guf and what a soul is and how people can be soul led and how there's no real language barrier when it comes to a soul language and how that is really the highest value, that really his presence is supposed to be that. And sometimes for our children, we think to ourselves, they have to have the same connection with Hashem that I have and they have to, you know, understand everything that I do. And actually your child has to do exactly what his neshama has to do. And if his neshama can't really grasp that, then not only is it not your responsibility to teach him, that's not his tafkid in the world at all even to do. So if you have a child who is on the spectrum, let's say on the autistic spectrum, you have to figure out what can this child do? Well, and set yourself up for technical success. For example, he cannot wait till midnight to have a meal. Let him have a matzah sandwich at the table. And if he can just be there for the first part for manishtana, and even if it's 9, 10, 11, 12, and all his peers can be there for 5 hours, but he can just be there for manishtana, make a big deal about him being there for the manishtana, give him lots of treats or whatever it is, and then he can go sit on the couch and read whatever book he wants to read. And again, you're not making it better for him by forcing him to sit at a table that he doesn't understand what's going on, and it's also disturbing everybody else around. So I feel like the first answer is for children who cannot be there for any part of it, Doniel's never at our Seder table, so then that's what he has to be in this world. And it's not my responsibility to make him like me. He has to be exactly who he is, and I have to accept that. And the second thing that I would say is that for whatever they can be, make sure you can be engaged with them for that piece, you know, and give them whatever they need in order to be, you know, to be able to enhance their experience, however small that experience is, and then let it go. They don't have to be exactly like the adults. But I think that there's also regular children and then teenagers, and we have to separate that out. Okay?
Yes, so true.
Okay. I like how you said regular children and teenagers.
Teenagers are a whole different Bria. They're like a different creation and they need to be answered separately. But children, okay, for children, there's a lot of pregame. That means there has to be like Uncle Moshe's songs playing for a whole month about Pesach, so they know all the Pesach songs, and there has to be a lot of like, you know, they make frogs in school. Like all the arts and crafts projects in school is all the pregame. So for little kids, it's all about the pregame because they're going to get very little from Seder night. They're going to be too excited and then too tired and then too hyper and then too overstimulated, and then it's all going to be very bad because they had too much grape juice and they throw up all of their new dress. The whole thing is like a nightmare. So really everything that they're getting from Pesach is really the pregame. Everything. So that means, you know, get them the books, the Jewish books all about Seder night. I read every single night for the whole month before Seder night, like Baruch goes to, has Pesach. Or,
Baruch learns about Pesach.
Yeah, Baruch learns about Pesach. Every single night to like my 6-year-old, and we would read it again and again, and this is part of the, and then on the night, did he really relate to anything on the Seder table? No, he was running around like a maniac with his cousins, but I know that he knows the story because I said it to him every single night with Baruch learns about Pesach, and that's how we learned about Pesach, and that was perfectly pitched for his level. And all for little kids, really, it's all about the pregame, because on Seder night they will just disappoint you on major levels for so many reasons. Smile for the picture. Pesach's in 5 minutes. Just smile. I will give you anything that you need. Just smile, because you're all matching in this moment, and there's no stains. So just smile for the picture.
And now you're on Instagram.
Actually, we should talk about that, because I've now come off. That's like a whole different story. Never mind. The whole idea is that for it's very age specific. For younger kids, it's all going to be about the pregame, because the whole idea is that they know the story of Seder night. So if they know the story of Seder night, that's the whole idea of what they need to be doing. And if they don't learn exactly on Seder night, as long as over Pesach, like the next day you're talking to them about it, so that's what you're supposed to be doing. And then there's teenagers. So it depends what type of teenager you have, but what I think is also good for teenagers, and it's also about the pregame, but it's also about giving them responsibility. And it's about knowing your child And so if your child would love to do, like, you say, okay, you're going to be in charge of this part of Seder night. I want you to read it and research it and get to Torah about it. And that's going to be your Pesach job.
Oh, nice.
Then that's great. If it's somebody who loves doing art stuff, you're like, okay, I want you to make, let's say, on sticks with masks, like all the different personalities, like a Paray mask and also a Moshe Rabbeinu mask and an Aaron mask and a Miriam mask. And I want you to make that so that we can pass them around the table and all act it out. So then you can do that for them. Or if what we don't want is we don't want them to be passive listeners for Seder night. What you want them to be is engaged.
Yeah.
And so again, it's about the pregame. You have to get them to be creative so they feel that they are an important part of Seder night.
Yeah.
So if I am the speaker and you're all listeners, so that's how passive. Interesting is that going to be for you? If you're right. A teenager, maybe 18 minutes, maybe.
That's generous.
that's generous. Right. But maybe. But if I know that, oh my gosh, very soon it's going to be me and I'm going to be doing these 3 pages of the Seder night, and I'm going to be in charge of reading it out loud and translating it and making it interesting for everybody. Oh my gosh, I have to look it up and I have to think about it. I have to listen to it. So it depends what type of teenager you have. Right. But I think across the board, you have to tell them that they are a very important part of Seder night. They're not just somebody who's filling a seat at your table. They actually are going to be active and you need them to be active and you need them to be a proper participant at your Seder table. And when you do that, you empower them to be leaders and empower them to, you know, see themselves as part of the Jewish people who's now describing the, you know, the story of the Jewish people. They're old enough now to tell over the story themselves. And that's really empowering and very special for them. And then they come to the Seder table. It's like, oh, I've got a job here.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd say.
Oh, I love that tip.
What would you say about the teenager who's like resistant, who's like, sorry, mom, not interested. I don't want to do that.
See, it's so, any kind of parenting question for very specific children, you then have to ask like 10 questions ahead of that. Like if somebody would ask me like, what should we do with a child who's very pessimistic? So I'd say, are they just really a very chilled, relaxed child? Is that their vibe? And then, and like you telling them to do this is too intense for them? Or is it because they're very angry that they have to be at a Seder table for 7-8 hours because they can't be there, in which case really you need to have a conversation with them how like they only need to be there till the main meal and then the rest of the stuff they can just read ahead and go to bed. And that again gives them autonomy. Basically, everybody wants autonomy and teenagers even more want. Everybody also wants to have significance, but everybody wants to have autonomy and teenagers are grabbing it back. They're like, you're not going to tell me what to do. You tell me to wear that, I'll wear the exact opposite. You tell me to sit here, I'll sit there. Mm-hmm. You tell me to go. Why? Because they're saying, I want to be in control. So what I find is that for the teenagers who are disinterested, maybe they've been turned off Yiddishkeit a bit. Maybe they can't sit through a 7-hour lesson of a Seder night or whatever it is. So I would say to them, let's go through the Seder night and see which stuff that. And really, I have to tell you, between you and me and anyone else who's listened to the Bazaar podcast, right,
just between us.
After the main meal of the Seder table, there's like a whole davening piece that could take another hour or two or could take another about 20 minutes if you just read through it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes what I advise people is to tell the teenager, listen, you just have to be with us till this point. And then we're going to like sing all the songs very slowly, do more explanations, blah, blah. And that might take us till 2 o'clock in the morning. You don't have to stay there for that bit. As long as you just read the rest, it's only like 5 pages or 6 pages. Read it to yourself, bench, drink your 4th cup of wine and just pass out. And that's right. Also fine. Then you can have a compromise with them. You can say, please, if you can contribute to this part of the meal, you don't have to then
be there for the rest.
Be there for that part of the meal. And I hesitate to say this online because, A, I'm not a poiseik. So people are like, how can Rabbitson Esty say that? She's not a Rav. She doesn't know. And
she's a Rabbitson.
That's a Rabbitson. So you have to listen to what I say. No, but also because it's very against traditional ways of thinking. But I think that nowadays we have children who are outliers, who are very non-traditional, and we still want them to feel welcome at our table, and we still want them to be part of at least the most important parts. And I think that that's very important to recognize that and include that. But anyone who could be there for the whole bit, my parents always made the atmosphere at the table so nice that we all wanted to be there all the way till the end. Right. Like it was just so fun, and we would sing so many songs, and we'd laugh, and we'd joke, and it was like just an endless party. So even though we finished at 2-3 in the morning, we wow. all wanted to be a part of it. So I think that's our responsibility, to make it not heavy and not intense and not, you know, some people are like, I'm your parent and you're my child and I must tell you the story. And you're like terrified. Really? Is this scary? So I think feel like when we don't carry the mitzvahs lightly, when we carry them in a very heavy way, our children back away. Because mm-hmm. it feels too heavy a burden to carry. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's like, we're just having so much fun. If you want to leave, go ahead and leave. Because this is just, we're just having a party. No one wants to leave.
Interesting. That's beautiful. Basically. And I'm also wondering, for some kids, like maybe the pregame, or you called it that,
yeah.
that happens in the kitchen, is like their way that they contribute. Yes. You know, that daughter who was like, I don't want to prepare a Dvar Torah, but I'm going to bake the brownies yes. and make the yes. cookies. So yes. when I come to the Seder, I'm part of the serving exactly. and I'm part of contributing in that Absolutely. Way. You know what I mean? Like
I feel, yeah.
giving them that autonomy to choose. How Definitely. Do you want to contribute yeah. to be part I love of that. This?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And when you serve the kugel that they made, and this is the kugel that yeah. Rina made, is it amazing? They feel like
$1 million.
I'm an important part of this. Mm-hmm. I'm an important mm-hmm. part of this family, of this process, of this
yeah.
whole Seder.
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, you mentioned earlier that you like mm-hmm. to listen to Shirim and podcasts
all the time. Yeah, yeah,
while
yeah.
you're doing, not just Erev Pesach, but like you listen before Shabbos.
I feel when like, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this out loud. Yeah, you yeah. can cut this out if you want. But basically, I feel like a lot of women's tasks are very mundane and boring.
Like yeah, yeah. Laundry, dishes, sweeping the floor, which is always oh, yeah. needing and to be swept.
Every week I go shopping again for the same food, and every day I'm eating something. So I feel like I have, and we do carpool, and we're in the car for many, 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 many hours, if I add up all the hours. So I feel like I'm constantly listening to something, because I want to enrich my mind, but I also want to get done what needs to get done. Mm-hmm. And now, because of audio stuff, I can do both. So,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah, yeah.
Hey. I love that feeling when I get into the car and be like, oh my gosh, there are like 10 podcasts that I really want to listen to. Like, first of all, it is overwhelming feeling, but like, wow. Wow, like there's so much yes. like I yes. want to hear. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. Like the explosion yeah. of like from listening yes. material yes. of the past, like, I don't know, 8-10 years has been like beyond.
Yeah.
And it's helped all us women.
Mm, yes.
Because I agree.
Even watching something is sometimes hard for me. Even when I have an option to watch or listen, I always press listen.
Oh, I'm the same. Yeah, I'm the same.
I can watch you. Like I always like doing something, but I really want to, you know, get the information.
Awesome. Yeah. So we'd love to hear from you who you like to listen to, and certainly whether it's Pesach related or even just non-Pesach inspiration, you know, who's on your playlist?
So I think the two main apps that I use on my phone are Torah Anytime and YU Torah. Mm-hmm. I love listening on YU. Yeah, YU Torah, is that what it's mm-hmm. called? It's an app. I listen to Moshe Weinberger a lot. Oh, I find nice. Him very, very inspirational. There is a Q&A by somebody called Rabbi Yitzchok Breitowitz mm-hmm. on a podcast, the podcast Q&A that my family are obsessed with.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Because mommy puts it on in the kitchen. So who else is on my podcast list? I listen to quite a lot of parenting podcasts, mm-hmm. not necessarily Jewish ones, just random ones that I found that I'm like, oh, that is so good. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because it's not true that on every podcast that I listen to, it's relevant to my kids. But I feel like for as long as you are learning information, you are creating awareness around your parenting. Mm. That means, I think that is also true about marriage education and about everything. Anything that you want to do well or that you are involved in all the time, if you want to help yourself become more aware of that, then you have to be always learning more about that topic. You always have to be trying to enrich yourself in that subject, because even if that's not the specific Shalom Bais issue or that not specific parenting, it doesn't really matter, because you're just talking about a subject that you are very involved in. So it brings awareness yeah. to other things.
Right, it like puts it like forward in your consciousness. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a very important thing. Yeah. Hmm.
Do you have a favorite Haggadah?
Do I have a favorite Haggadah? I always love the Haggadahs that have lots of English explanation around it for when I get bored in the Seder.
You know
when somebody's speaking overly long about whatever it is, then I sit down and I can read.
Right.
You know, so I actually have about, I think most Jewish families have 20 or 30 Haggadahs. So I always have like for two sure. or three next to me, you know, Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Sachs, mm-hmm. maybe, and, you know.
Oh, yeah, I think I got his Haggadah last year.
Like, and it's just like, I just quickly read inspirational ideas about that thing to keep me focused on, because I don't want my wife to wander and for me to think other things. If this is like the time that I'm setting aside to learn about this, and when other things are going on that are not interesting to me, then I can always, inspire myself.
Beautiful. Well, as we close, is there anything that you feel that you wanted to address that you feel maybe you've left out, a message for our woman listeners about Pesach, one last little bit of chizuk that you might want to share before we say goodbye?
Okay. Yes. I think that this generation is very rich in information and very poor in transformation. And I feel that therefore, learning Torah is not just about the knowledge that you receive, but it has to be from a person that inspires you. And so it's very important to go through different shiurim until you find somebody that you say, oh, this is the person that speaks to my neshama. Why? Because when you hear somebody in a certain way, you get to bring your own personal insight into that. And there's a very big difference between knowledge and insight. So the left-hand side of your brain is all about information and knowledge and facts and data, loads of it. And then the right side of your brain is all about understanding and insight. And what understanding and insight really means is connecting all the dots until it impacts you personally. And once you connect all the dots and deeply understand it in a way you can understand it, that's what transforms your life. So therefore, what I'm trying to say is that It's not good enough to just read all the right books or listen to the right podcasts. You have to find a person. Doesn't matter who it is. And nowadays, because we have access to Torah teachers across the globe, it can be somebody who doesn't live in your town and somebody who you've never met and maybe you might never meet. That means it used to be that only the people who went to yeshivas and seminaries, the very elite few, would meet maybe one person in their life that would teach Torah that would be transformational. Why was it transformational? Because they said a piece of Torah and you felt it, oh, right here. And then it made you have such a deep insight into your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you transformed your life. And that's really what transformation is. Information is not going to be transformation. And I think some people mistake one for the other. And I think that's what happens. That's the big mistake we make. And so I would encourage everybody to search until you find the Torah teacher that speaks the Torah that you can feel in your heart, because that's the Torah that will transform your life and lead you to your greater self.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, in case all of this is resonating with you, Rebbetzin Essi, we will link her Torah anytime. Shirim.
Yes, in our show notes.
Wow. Well, you know how podcasting goes. We like to record things a little bit in advance. So Pesach isn't so much on our mind just yet, but I am feeling inspired already. 100%. Like totally getting in the mind frame, and really wanted to thank you, Essi, for taking the time. You're visiting Cleveland. You're here speaking for a number of organizations, and that you took the time on this busy Arab Shabbos to meet with us means so much. And thank you. Thank you for everything.
Thank you very much. Thanks. This was so fun.
Oh, such a pleasure. That was such a phenomenal conversation. I loved that incredible story that she told from her childhood that her father gave over every year. That was like, gave me chills. Like the idea of having like that, having such like a Masorah within the greater Masorah of Pesach. That was very, very cool. And I also appreciated her her perspective on kids and pre-gaming and having realistic expectations for what different children can like engage, how different children can engage at the Seder. I find like, you know, we've said this before and I have a feeling we'll probably say it again, but expectations.
Killer of joy.
They make a difference. We got to make sure that they're reasonable.
Yeah. And I appreciated that coming from her. She, you know, she has a disabled son.
Yeah.
And like that, I think, is part of her greatness and her godless and why she's become such a mentor to so many, is she's like been there. You know, like we can hear from her and someone in really a very challenging situation, guidance about parenting, guidance about treating your children differently, children who have different needs. It's like, okay, Rebbetzin Essi, tell me what to do. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
About the story, we all have our Pesach Seder story, right? Like, I think they're like the sort of this like tradition, whether you have, you're with grandparents at a Seder where like a grandfather says it's one story over and over, or you yourself have something that you share with your spouse. I think if we think about our Sederim, you know, we do it every year, and there can be those natural things that we just go back to, or insights that we share. I think I'm going to think about that this Seder.
I feel like with me, it's more like the recipes that I make over
and over again. Well, that's for sure. Like, but that's sort of the beauty about Pesach. It's this like we revisit it, like these, the comfort of those routines.
Yeah.
And finally, I just like to share, you know, we recorded this episode way before Pesach.
Oh yeah. Like in January we recorded it?
Something like
that.
It was
a long time ago.
And I thought that was very cool about Rabbi Tzassi. She could just like plug in, like it was not where our headspace was, but she did talk about now buy something for Pesach.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
And at the time it was like very far ahead. And she says she had bought something on sale during those.
I was so impressed.
Yeah. And but she was singing ahead about it. And now when everyone's listening to this, you know, of course it's going to be a week before Pesach and we may be scrambling.
No, not a week. It'll be like a little less than 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
There still is time to.
A little bit of time.
There still is time, and it doesn't have to mean buy a dress, but do something for yourself, you know, and don't wait literally to Wednesday, Erev Pesach, to remember like, oh, it is important, and it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It just has to be something that you are consciously doing in preparation.
I love how she tied it into like when we put ourselves last, as we so frequently do as mothers. You know, I was thinking about even with laundry, like whose laundry gets done last? My laundry gets done last. Like that's how it is. Like everyone else's gets done. But I was thinking about how she said that it's not the right message to send our children that we're at the bottom of the list.
That's so true.
You know, so and it was very profound. So thank you, Esty. Thank you, Rebbitz and Esty. Like how I'm a first name basis here. Here is this episode's takeaway. Remember to do something for yourself this Pesach. And don't wait until 2 days before, whether it's buying a new outfit, a special bouquet for your table, or your own stash of Pesach chocolate. Do it just for you. And doing something for yourself doesn't have to mean buying anything. You can also designate an hour off for yourself to do whatever you want, or schedule breaks for walks and fresh air in the midst of your preparations. The point is to keep yourself and your well-being a priority. Thanks for listening to the very end of this episode. We hope that you enjoyed this episode of DMC. If you'd like to stay in touch, you can email us at dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. See you next episode.